Welcome to Midlife Bites. This is the podcast that tells the truth about how midlife bites, why it bites, and what happens after it bites. I'm Kirsten Bowes, clinical psychologist, midlife mentor, and someone who believes midlife isn't a crisis. Well, maybe it is a bit. At the very least, it's a reckoning. But it's also an invitation to your reclamation. Here you'll find real talk, real stories, and the kind of conversations that make you feel less alone and more like yourself. And heads up, I get a little bit sweary sometimes, so tune in if you do too, or at least don't get offended if you hear a few choice words. Sometimes it's just me, sometimes it's me chatting with a guest, but either way, it's always going to be raw, relatable, and real. Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning into. It is fabulous to know that you're back listening to us again. We are cracking on with this season, and I'm really quite excited to say that I think we may well be, this might be episode 17 by now that you are about to tune into. And the thing I like most about this is I get to talk to my amazing All About Her members, and this, you know, give you all an opportunity to get to know them and also to hear their wisdom, their insights, their experiences, their perspective of this whole kind of shebang called the menopausal transition. So I feel really excited to be able to bring this to you. And today I am as excited because I am going to introduce you to the wonderful Dr. Sarah Davenport, who is actually a clinical psychologist. She hangs out in Victoria and has quite an amazing kind of background and also a really amazing team of psychologists, which I think she'll share a little bit about when we get to hear from her. So thank you, Sarah, for joining us today.
Thanks for inviting me. It's always nice talking to you, Kirsten.
We should probably just hit record on lots of random conversations that we have period of time. It's always the way that after we kind of sign off or log off or whatever, I think, damn, we should have recorded snippets of that. But anyway, I've got you today, and I've got you for a really decent period of time, I guess, where this particular episode, like the other intro episodes, is a chance for people to get to know you. Because, you know, I think seeing a health professional can be nerve-wracking anyway, particularly psychologists. And I really want to try and, you know, make you all as approachable as I know you actually are to the people who might be tuning in. So I'm wondering if you could tell us all a little bit about, I guess, your career generally and, you know, where you've walked through your career to now.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, so I'm originally from Perth and still go back regularly. So I did my undergrad degree in WA before moving over to Canberra to do my postgrad studies, PhD in clinical psychology. And then I spent the first half of my career in public mental health. So I was working in New South Wales and Victoria. I worked with people kind of at all stages of their journey, from inpatient units, you know, crisis care to community work, people requiring kind of longer term psychological therapy. And on the whole, loved it, learnt a lot. At the time, learnt a lot from the people that I saw during that time, but also my colleagues before then transitioning into private practice. So the thing I really love about private practice is, you know, being able to work with people in the longer term. And so I've been in private practice now for almost 10 years, and I'm lucky now to work with a team in a group private practice here in Malvern East in Melbourne.
Yeah, I am. Wow. What, I guess, a background, like a really intense working in a public mental health system across all those areas within a system like that is really full on, and I think it adds so much to the knowledge and skill base because it's really pointy end stuff typically. And I think there's a misunderstanding that private practice is a doddle. I've actually heard that word used quite a few times. And what really interested me when I moved into the private practice space and worked with what I refer to as the everyday kind of person, particularly the everyday woman, was the complexities that can still present, which may or may not mean that there's, hospital admissions or anything like that going on for our clients in private practice. But co people are complex, full stop.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think I really, I really appreciated working in public mental health because it gave me a good sense of the health system in general and just how to navigate that. So I think that's been a great kind of grounding for private practice. But yeah, I'm the same. Every person is unique and has their own story. And I love that I need to know about all sorts of things in private practice. I'm always learning from my clients and learning new things to offer them. So I feel like probably at my sharpest, honestly, doing private practice. And I say to, I do a bit of mentoring and supervision. I say to other psychologists, you'll be a better practitioner for it, for going into private practice, because you really need to be on your game, know what you're talking about, understand the health system, and really be a good, stable pair of hands for your clients, to help them through their journey, whatever it is that comes up for them.
I definitely would agree with that. Having had a few people over the years, as you know, and as listeners, if they're tuned in before, I had the group practice for 18 years, sold it to concentrate on all about her. But I've had many people work in the practice over that period of time, many master students on their pracs as well during. And I often, I guess, particularly those who'd had some experience in providing therapy in some kind of setting before they came to private practice, the more manualized their prior experience of therapy was, so the more they were in really specific programs that had manuals that they worked from, the more challenging private practice was. You generally don't get a heck of a lot of information about your client before they rock up. All the information really comes from them over those sessions and the time we spend with them. So I agree, you definitely have to be on your game. The beauty of private practice is also that you get to really kind of choose where you niche yourself, and that can evolve over time. And so that enables those of us, which I think most of us are really, we're big learners, we do like to keep ourselves, and it's a way to channel and use that knowledge and learning in a private practice setting. But at the same time, I guess what I find in private practice is that we get to work with really interesting and, yes, complex people, but perhaps without the kind of the limitations of systems and the rules of systems. You can only see people for this amount of time, or this criteria, if they fall out of the criteria, then they're. There's just so much more flexibility in how we can work with clients, how long for, the models that we use, all of that kind of stuff. So, yeah,
I always say to people, I feel the most like myself in private practice, because you're not wearing the hat of the organization that you're in, you're not having to toe the company line and do things in a certain way, even though actually what this person needs is this. There's just like a, it's really nice to connect with people in such a genuine and authentic way in private practice, to truly kind of speak your mind, share your thoughts about what you think's going on, and help them get the best care, whether it's with you or someone else. But you really get to do what you think is right in those moments, rather than following a model of care or following an organization's, inclusion, exclusion criteria, and all the rest of it.
No, I think I'll be an advocate for private practice until the day I die. That's like,
I joke with my colleagues. I'm unemployable at this point.
yeah,
Like, I can't go back. This is it for me. And
totally.
I always laugh and say to my clients when we finish up our work, you know where to find me. I'm not going anywhere. Like, this,
Exactly.
You can call me in 5 years' time. I'll be here.
Exactly, which is wonderful. Like that's actually quite reassuring for clients. But with all of that, I'm really curious to hear how you've landed in the menopause space. Like, tell us that story, that journey.
I'm going to try and make it a more simple story, maybe, than what it is. I guess the thing I like about private practice is working with people long term. And I've been really fortunate that I've either worked with people for many years now, just because they value the space and they, you know, decide to keep coming, make that a part of their kind of wellness plan. And for other people, they've tended to come and go after that initial period of working together. And what I started to notice a few years ago was that, you know, a whole lot of women that I worked with in maybe their late 20s, 30s were coming back in their late 30s, 40s, or 50s and saying, you know, I've had a relapse in my symptoms, but I don't know why. The symptoms are not really, they're a bit different from how they were before. I can't identify a really clear trigger. All of the things that I usually do to manage it are not working anymore. And that just, you know, not only was that happening for my clients, but it was also happening in my personal life with my friends and family. They were saying the same things. And so it made me really curious, you know, what is going on here? And I was really lucky then to, I mean, I'm a curious person by nature, and I was really lucky then to just connect with some people and organizations to learn as much as I could. Many, many years ago, when I was working in public mental health, I shared an office with a colleague who's now a really good friend. And she back then worked in probably one of the only public health menopause clinics. And I, to my, yeah, well, probably still, right? To my great regret, I paid no attention at all. I was like, oh, I don't know what, I don't understand what you're doing over there. But I circled back to her and I was like, tell me everything about that, you know, about hormones and women's mental health. And, you know, she's been really generous and supportive and encouraging of kind of finding out more information and being able to kind of point me in the right direction. And certainly joining All About Her was part of that. You know, along the way, there have been interesting experiences just around women's mental health and hormones generally. So years ago, I happened to attend like a medical conference where I heard Professor Jayashri Kulkarni speak, which kind of opened my eyes to all sorts of things. I remember quite naively then going to my next clinical review in my public health job and talking about what I had learnt at the conference, and that being summarily dismissed as kind of like a fringe, you know, not part of mainstream psychiatry, you know, and being much younger then and more junior in my career, I kind of accepted that and I think kind of forgot about it. But then, you know, when you work with women, of course, all the time it comes up, there are changes in their mental health around all sorts of, you know, gynecological experiences or issues that they might have. And it, you know, it gets to a point where it's really unavoidable that there's clearly a link between our hormones and our mental health. And so I think probably all of those things combined really led me to this space. So sorry, it is a bit of a messy story, but it's been a bit of a messy path.
That's life, isn't it? You know, I don't know whether women in particular, I just don't think we're designed to have these linear step one, step two, step three pathways. I think are exposed to many things. And a bit like you, where you were saying, you know, you look back now and you can kind of see, oh, there's this woman I worked with and I can draw from her knowledge and skill. And, oh, I remember Jayashri Kulkarni speak and the response to that information when I brought it back. So these things kind of stay somewhere in our psyche and we pull on them, we draw from them when they present. And, you know, I think, again, going back to raving about private practice, where you very first started saying, you know, you've got long-term clients and you've seen them, you know, through different life experiences and life stages. And that is the beauty of private practice, is that you get the opportunity often to work with clients, whether it's in a consistent long-term basis or whether chunks of time. Either way, you get to walk these parts of life with them, which I truly enjoy. And of course, as that happens, then you're being exposed to, I guess, conversation and around different life stages and the experiences that. So it's inevitable that you tick off a lot of different stuff, that people can. So, I mean, it sounds like you have this a beautiful kind of diverse practice, kind of caseload yourself, and that, there's all this wealth of knowledge and experience that you bring to the table, as well as you said, a really kind of curious mind with the endless drive to learn and understand. We're such meaning seekers and understanding seekers. And I think that's one of the really helpful things we give our clients. I'd love to hear, just before we wrap up, because I know you actually own a group practice. You kind of played it down. You're very humble each time you've mentioned this in our conversations. I'd love to get a bit of a sense and have the listeners get a bit of a sense of your group practice. Tell us a bit about, maybe not every single individual practitioner, but, what's the vibe?
Sure. Yeah, so we're a clinical psychology practice. And I guess it really started because I was loving private practice. I did it on the side from my public health job. And I had lots of colleagues in public health and other services who were curious about private practice, but didn't really know where to start. We knew that we loved working together. And so it sort of developed from there. I think what I noticed was, I have been really lucky to work with a lot of colleagues who are really talented, have very specific kind of skill sets and interests. And, whenever I talk to someone and do an intake, I'm always really conscious of, am I the best person for them? Is there somebody else, in my network who could be a good fit? And so it was just really nice to start working with some of my colleagues who I knew could work really well with some of the people who were coming through the door. And it's also that really daunting thing of, oftentimes people would call me and say, I've been recommended to see you and I might not be able to see them. But the next question would be, well, who do you recommend? Because it's so hard out there to find a practitioner. A lot of practices, we talk about our qualifications and our area of interests and things, but it's pretty hard for people to navigate, is this person really going to understand me or get me? And I find it a really just rewarding experience listening to people's stories and being able to kind of set either work with them myself or set them up with somebody else who I think would be a great match. So look, I just have a small private practice. There's under 10 of us. As I said, we're all clinical psychologists. We've all got our own particular interests, but I think we pretty much kind of share the same values around our practice. I know everyone in my practice is really dedicated to what they do. A lot of them have, specific interests that they're able to help their clients really well with. I hear all the time feedback from clients, and people are always baffled by this, and I think you were when I mentioned it recently. I still do every single intake. I talk to every new client because, again, I just find that so helpful to know, like, who is it that's walking through the door? What are they saying? Like, what are the words they're using to describe what's going on for them? And, it's very satisfying to be able to get a good sense of, I actually know who I think might work well for you. So, it does take a bit of work, but it's something that I'm pretty determined to try and hold on to if I can.
Well, I think part of what you're also speaking to is not just what the issue is or the issues are that the client wants to work on, which, if they've shared that openly, because sometimes they're a bit reluctant to do
that.
Yeah,
sure.
They've shared that, then you can kind of start to narrow who comes to mind. Oh, so-and-so and these few people work with it. But I think your team, or you have colleagues who you know well, know their personality, and that I think is really what makes the difference.
I agree.
In terms of the process, because you can have all the expertise in a particular issue that somebody wants to work on, but if there's not that connection at a person-to-person level, then it's not going to be anywhere near as effective. And in fact, the client may choose not to continue because it just doesn't feel right.
You can hear that from people too, you know, like someone will say, I think this person, because they've got the expertise, I've read about that kind of therapy. But when you're talking to them, you know, you realize that the personality match there is not quite right, or just the approach will not quite work, or you know, the way that that person implements that therapy is maybe not quite what the client will expect. So, yeah, there's a lot to consider. I mean, it's a tough ask to expect that clients are going to be able to navigate that themselves. And also, you know, we always say in the profession too, it might take more than, you know, one first session to find the right person. Well, you know, that's tough too, isn't it? Like telling your story to someone new and going on that journey. So, yeah. I mean, I probably should have said, I mean, we do a lot of trauma and PTSD work, whether the trauma is kind of childhood trauma or more adult trauma. Lots and lots of relationship and dating issues, sometimes sexual issues. I would say big life stage change. So young people kind of finishing school, going into uni or the workplace, people changing jobs, you know, a lot around women's mental health and hormones. So not just kind of menopause transition, but women with kind of PMDD or endometriosis, adenomyosis. Those sorts of conditions, you know, and a lot of grief and loss, and people in kind of the later parts of their life making sense of their life and, you know, maybe putting to rest some things that have come up earlier for them. So,
and that's the beauty of a group practice, isn't it? That, you know, it's kind of like people might think, how can one person do all that? And, you know, perhaps that is possible, but that's not what you're actually saying. What you're saying is that across the team, you've got people who work and across the team, you cover, for want of a better word, all of those kinds of things. So, yeah, it's definitely one of the things I enjoyed about, you know, group private practice. And it's kind of not quite the same model, but it's certainly one of the fundamentals of why I set up All About Her in the way I did, with, you know, across our disciplines. So, because yeah, we can't be it all and do it all. The psychology things that women need and can benefit from as they navigate these years. But thank you very much for sharing all of that.
My pleasure.
It's just really lovely to hear about how you've arrived at this particular place, you know, the pathway that you've walked professionally yourself to get here, and what's available beyond you too, which is super cool. And that way, you know, if something that you've said has resonated with any of the listeners, then, you know, they will know that it's going to be you having a chat with them.
That's right. Call me. You know where to find me. Now or in 5 years' time, I'll be there.
Back you down and have that conversation. I know that you and will be really helpful. So thank you for coming on. We're going to have you
My pleasure.
On another episode. So for those who've tuned in and kind of, you know, are curious to hear more general, like from Sarah, but also generally around different issues and aspects and parts of the menopausal transition, then certainly if you haven't been listening to the episodes previously, you can go back and listen to those. And also we'll have more coming up. Yeah, keep an eye out for the next couple of episodes for the year. So thanks, everyone. You've been listening to Midlife Bites. If you liked what you heard, hit follow so you don't miss an episode. And if you have a minute, please leave a review. It really helps other women find the show. If you want to share your experience of the midlife bite, or you're an expert who can speak to the delights of it, please email me at kirsten@allaboutherscentre.com.au and I'll be in touch. You can also head to our website, allaboutherscentre.com.au, to find a practitioner who can support you through midlife. Or if you're a therapist, check out what's included in our health professional membership. We'd love to have you on board. Either way, remember, midlife isn't here to break you, it's here to remake you.